talked about in the show goes to prove that the universe is still strange and can surprise us.
Yes, and that in itself is surprising, because if you grabbed a bunch of astronomers in 1900, for example, and said, you know, what are the big puzzles of the universe? They would have said there aren't too many more. They've figured out all the major stuff. They still didn't know what made the stars shine and how elements were produced. There were still puzzles, but they were on their way to solving those. Well, it turned out that in the next 100 years, they came up with dark energy, dark matter. I mean, there were more puzzles than anybody would have predicted. And frankly, that may remain the case, that we continue to find that the universe is stranger than we thought it could be.
So we've looked at the perhaps regular behavior of comets and the irregular behavior of Pluto's moons, the possible evidence for parallel universes, a tantalizing suggestion of an alien habitat. Again, there's no evidence for that conclusively. Well, those are all very intriguing. In the next round of stories, puzzling stories from the universe, what do you think that frontier will be?
Well, that's the question I can't answer, obviously, because when you discover something new, by definition, you didn't expect to find it. And actually, as Mark Showalter said, that's the interesting thing about astronomy. It's exploration. It's like getting in a ship and sailing off to seas that have never been sailed before.
Well, that is the end of this show. Thanks to the Cosmic Wonders who helped produce it, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, where scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to Cosmic Conundrum. And if you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, you'll find it in our archive on our website, bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer listening to over-the-air radio because you find it a conundrum how you could possibly listen to a show on the internet, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show. Oh, and do you have a comment, a criticism, or a suggestion? Throw in some faint praise? Email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
Welcome to Big Picture Science. I'm Sir Isaac, here with my diminutive canine co-host. And on this episode, as in every episode, objects in motion.
This is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
Come Dearborn. On, man. Dave's not here, this man.
Nah, Dave, I know it's you. Now get waves. Up.
What do you want, man?
Don't you remember? We're going to the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair at Henry Ford College.
That's a lot of words, man. Did you get a dictionary for Christmas?
Come on,
just
Dave.
When you
let's
thought the
get
universe
going.
Couldn't get any more weird.
Oh,
it did.
Man.
We
this place
examined
is beautiful,
a few observations
and it smells
that
so
are
good in here.
Particularly
all
puzzling.
The candles,
there's evidence that massive
so
asteroid
yeah,
impacts,
man. It smells
like
nothing
the one
like
that killed
car.
Off the dinosaurs.
Hey, man, don't
maybe
go dissing my car. It got us here, didn't it? Hey, what's that dude doing over there? Looks like he's taking a nap.
No, man. That's one of the body workers. They can help you find ways to relax.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. I can dig relaxing. What is that music I hear?
Yeah, man, there's music here too. They also have speakers that can help you find your own inner peace, and they even have a labyrinth room for personal introspection.
Personal what?
You know, man, to connect with your inner self.
Oh, yeah man, that's cool. I can dig it. Yeah. Man, this place is full of cool things to do. It looks like we're going to be here all day long.
That's okay, man. They have snacks for when you get the munchies.
Oh, man, I always have the munchies.
Yeah, you always look like you have the munchies.
The 9th Annual WHFR Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair is taking place March 18th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on the campus of Henry Ford College. This year's fair is loaded with speakers, vendors, and body workers. There will also be live music and plenty of food available. This year's nonprofit partner is Gleaners Food Bank, so please feel free to bring a non-perishable food item to help others less fortunate. You can find out more information on this fundraiser at WHFR.fm. The 9th Annual WHFR Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, March 18th on the campus of Henry Ford College.
WHFR is a non-commercial, volunteer-staffed radio station that strives to bring you the type of programming that other radio stations won't. Because we are a non-commercial station, we rely on you, our listeners, to help support us during our annual pledge drive. This year's on-air radiothon will take place from Sunday, March 19th through Saturday, March 25th. Please make it a point to tune in during Radiothon and support WHFR, the station making waves.
Hi, This is Scott Boatwright, the host of Live from Studio J. Every Thursday, I present the best in local music of all genres. From 5 to 6, I present live performances for your listening pleasure. The week of March 19th through the 25th is our annual Radiothon, where we ask you, the loyal listener, to pledge a donation so that we can continue to do this, as well as all our other great programming. To say thanks, we're presenting a live performance all week. Listen to your favorite shows from 5 to 6 and hear singer-songwriter, blues rock, classic rock R&B, jazz, metal, blues, and punk. That's March 19th through the 25th, only on the station Making Waves, WHFR.FM.
Alrighty, welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio, nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're discussing all things about theater organs and church organs and various instruments with Dave Callantine. Dave, thanks so much for bringing the world of organ music to WHFR Radio.
Thanks for having me here.
Okay. We're going to get started with a little piece, and this is a theater organ, so let's find out what that's all about.
Hey, Dave, come on.
Okay, let's talk for a minute while I clean up. Welcome to live radio. Dave, tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been playing. And how did you start out? You told me that you started out at 3.
I grew up with a player piano at home. And when I was 3 years old, I was finally strong enough to pump the pedals and play. And I started playing along with it, which my parents realized is not something that's normal. But I just started teaching myself how to play the piano, and then with a player piano having all the different roles available, I just learned various types of music and kept growing up. And then I got into Nickelodeons, which are player pianos that have many more instruments in them, be it pipes, drums, xylophones, bells. Mm-hmm. I brought some samples that we'll listen to that later on in this episode as well.
Think we're ready.
Okay, yeah. Let's hear a theater organ.
I would applaud too. That was wonderful. So tell us, you had a whole band with you.
Essentially, yes. It is. They originally were called unit orchestras because you have every instrument that would be in a symphony orchestra, but in an organ. Mm-hmm. So you have pipes. That particular organ was a Barton organ that has several hundred pipes. But then also up in the pipe chambers, you have all the drums. The bass drum, the cymbal, you have the tuned percussion, such as a xylophone, chimes, bells, a marimba. They're all just sort of hanging off the walls, hanging off the ceiling, and there's a mallet for each note, each percussion instrument. And whenever you have that particular stop tab on the organ, it plays whenever you hit that note. It's quite a fascinating instrument.
Is this the organ at the Senate?
No, that organ was actually at the Rialto Theater in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Because I've performed there often, but it's very similar to what mm-hmm. is at the Redford Theater, the Senate Theater, or at the Fox Theater mm-hmm. with those organs. And all those organs were made in 1928. So this isn't a new instrument. These are really something that, you know, to think that they came up with something like that back in the late 20s is just quite fascinating because right. it's all air driven, it's all pneumatics, and you know the music that they make is just unlimited. It's, mm-hmm. it's up to your wild imagination with what you can do, mm-hmm. which is why I really love the theater organ and what it can do. I love the classical organ too. There is a whole different world. It is really two different types of instruments. I wouldn't say apples and oranges. I'd say apples and watermelons because it really is quite different. Yeah, there are pipes involved, but the whole layout of the instrument is different and playing it is a different style. I respect both, but I love the theater organ much more. Mm-hmm. And
could you explain the difference? Expand on that a little bit.
Well, the theater organ, again, we have much more of the symphonic nature, so we have all of the instruments, and then we also have sound effects. There are several different sound effects that are available because these were built to accompany silent movies. So when you go to a silent movie and somebody is driving by with a car, we can hit a car horn. If there's birds in the movie, we can hit the bird chirping. We can have fog horns, train whistles. There's even a glass box in some of these instruments that flips over and you get the sound of glass crashing down, thunder, wind, and it's all made, you know, with original 1928 stuff that operates off of air pressure, of all things. And so you definitely don't have that, you know, on a Sunday morning church service. Of course, sometimes that might be fun, but
wake up people with that breaking glass.
Exactly. And then as far as the style of pipe work, it's a lot more the vibrato or the tremulant is much more pronounced in a theater organ to get more of a shimmering sound like an orchestra. The basis of pipes is also made off of a different set or rank of pipes. We can also extend our ranks of pipes. A typical organ keyboard has 61 notes on it compared to the 88 of a piano. So for each rank of pipes, you have 61 notes. In a theater organ, we might have 103 or more because we can add octaves above and below what you would normally play, what is called a unified sound. So we can have it different things coupled together where on a theater organ, you could hit one note on a keyboard but have five playing. Mm-hmm. So you can make it sound a lot bigger than what it actually is. And so it's just a whole different style, a whole different mindset of playing that compared to a classical instrument.
Right. Now, if we go back to the 20s when these were created, we have pretty much, I would think, every city, every big city probably had one or two or more to entertain people because
yes.
that was what you did on Saturday night. You went to the movie and you got the newsreels, so you caught up on the news and then all kinds of other things happened. Time happened, age happened.
Exactly.
And so of Do you have any idea where we were number-wise in the 20s so far as the organs go?
We had thousands of thousands. Sure. Because you have to realize also most of the big theaters had an organ, but they also had an orchestra. But I don't know any orchestra that could play for 14 hours a day without having to take a break.
Yeah.
facilities, if you would.
Yeah.
And so they created these instruments to give the orchestra a break. And then a lot of smaller theaters, like, say, for instance, the Redford Theater here in Detroit, they didn't have the staffing to have a full orchestra, but they did have their Barton organ, mm-hmm. which is still there and still played mm-hmm. a lot. And so it was basically not replacing the orchestra, but sort of giving them a break.
Okay. All right. And now we have, there are four, I guess, I can think of right offhand, and that would be the Senate, the Fox, the Redford, and you mentioned one in Chicago.
Another one that in the area that's used often is the Michigan Theater in Ann Arbor.
Oh, okay.
And there's also one in Chesterfield, Michigan, in a large museum. So while you're looking at a wonderful collection of classic cars, there's a big Wollitzer Theater organ that's there that played an awful lot too. So it's they're out there, mm-hmm. not as much. We're down to the hundreds now instead of the thousands
wow.
that what we were. But mm-hmm. The fact that we are still able to find some of them, many are being restored and put back in. Mm-hmm. to some theaters, which is nice. A lot of them made it into homes. Some people, when they realized that some of these old movie palaces were being torn down, which is unfortunate, they went in before the wrecking ball got in there and took the organ and literally added a room to their house and
oh
put the organ in. Sometimes the organ room was larger than any other room in the house, but they save the organ, and that's essentially what is going back into some of these theaters across the country,
mm-hmm.
Which is part of the group that I'm involved with the American Theater Organ Society. I'm actually the corporate treasurer of that, a corporate secretary of that group, and then the chapter that's here of that in Michigan is the Motor City Theater Organ Society. That got formed from people that wanted to save the organ at the Redford Theater. And they actually formed a group to work on the organ after hours, working from midnight to 6 in the morning to get the organ back and working after it hadn't been used for over 40 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And then once they got it going, they started doing midnight organ concerts. Literally, at midnight, the 2,000 people were coming into the theater to listen to an organ concert. When the owners of the theater decided to stop running the theater regularly, they gave these guys a shot at leasing the building. And then they said, okay, we're done with the building. Do you want to buy it? Well, then they had to, figure out exactly what was going on, and they formed the Motor City Theater Organ Society and bought the building to save the organ. And now to keep everything going, they do the classic film series every other weekend or so and do organ concerts and silent movies. And I'm now the president of that organization, mm-hmm. and I've been involved with that organization now for over 25 years. But it's to keep the organ there going strong, mm-hmm. Keep it maintained. Most of that organ is still running off of original materials.
That's amazing.
The original wiring, there's leather in there, the blower. So it's an amazing instrument because it essentially is there unchanged from 1928. And with the Senate Theater, I'm actually the treasurer there of the Detroit Theater Organ Society. We had the organ that was in the Fisher Theater. And then when the Fisher remodeled to what it looks like today, they didn't want the organ. And it didn't fit their plan, was what they said. So that originally got bought by a gentleman by the name of George Orbitz. And he bought it to put in his home. And then instead he decided to, with some friends, form a little club and put it in what was the Iris Theater, and then when they outgrew that, they bought the Senate Theater and put the organ there, but that is still running off of everything original.
Where's the Iris?
Iris is now a parking lot somewhere in downtown Detroit.
Okay. and the Senate is Livernois, Michigan,
mm-hmm. and they do monthly organ concerts there. But you actually get to walk through that organ because the chambers are on the stage of what was the Senate Theater. So after the concerts, you actually get to walk through the pipe chambers and see, you know, all the thousands of pipes. You know, it's just a forest of pipes. And a lot of people keep wondering where the speakers are at. And I just keep laughing and saying, well, there's about 2,000 of them behind that wall. Go take a look. And they don't realize that for every individual note, there's a pipe. So if you the larger the organ, the more pipes. Mm-hmm. And you get to walk through that and see the guts of the organ, which is quite fascinating.
Wow. The Senate, way back, had a very famous baseball player who played organ there. I think it was 1968. That was a World Series year.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. I've been going through and reading some of the last articles, and he drew quite the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was somebody that was known from television and radio all over. And here he was doing a live appearance, you know, at the big organ there.
We were talking about a very young, very thin Denny McLean.
Yes.
And my grandmother actually heard that concert.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So I remember her talking about it. So
nice.
Yeah. Okay, so... are there organs that start out from these 1920 technology, from the 1920s technology, that are modernized to some extent? Where they...
Yeah, there's actually a company a few companies that will go through and computerize the guts of the organ, and with what is called a relay. The relay is really the brain of the organ, and if you ever go to the Senate, you'll be able to see the relay room, which is about the size of a typical bedroom, practically, that is just full of switches and pneumatic, switches that are controlling the organ. And that is now being replaced with essentially an iPad. It's amazing what it can do. But what it also enables then is being able to record MIDI, so you can add other different voices. You could add drum machines to play the original percussions. It basically, you don't have to worry about if something in the relay room is not working, trying to find it, because with, like, take for instance the Fox organ or the Senate organ, it's got the original wiring. It's all the original gray wire.
Wow.
Every wire is the same color. It's just gray. So if that wire breaks somewhere, it can take 2 to 3 weeks just to find where that connection is at.
Okay.
And then you have to figure out how to rewire it, you know, with that. With modern relays, you can just go, oh, okay, here it is, because it's all, you know, modern, updated, and plays off of a Cat 5 cable. So there are advantages and disadvantages. I like both, but I love the fact that we have the second largest Wolitzer Theater organ in the world, ever built by Wolitzer, is in the Fox Theater. Right now, it is the world's largest remaining original organ. The only organ Wolitzer built that was larger than that is at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. And that organ has been messed with by so many people that don't know how to maintain a theater organ, that it is a far cry from what it was when it was originally installed. Where the Detroit Fox organ is essentially as Wolitzer. You walk in and you can just smell Wolitzer. You just know that is a Wolitzer organ with the way it is. And we're starting a restoration process that instead of computerizing it, we're actually restoring all of the original mechanical action, because it works. It's lasted almost 90 years without any problems, so we're going to be restoring it completely, and it'll last another 90 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Could you compare and contrast the sound differences when you start, quote-unquote, modernizing things as opposed to putting back a new leather strap, you know, that sort
of thing? Well, the sound really isn't changed because the pipe is still going to blow air through. It's just a mechanism for opening the valve underneath. There's you push one note and it goes back to the relay room where it opens up a keying relay, and then that goes in further into the relay room where it goes through what is called a switch stack. And that switch stack, if you have a stop tab on, it's going to complete it's going to move a rocker board that has all the connectors for that rank of pipes. And then when that power goes through that wire, it'll then go to the pipe chamber, which will then open up a valve, which will then open up a hole for the air to go through up into the pipe. That happens almost instantaneously, you know, when you're at the console. And if you're in the relay room when the organ is playing, it sounds like popcorn going off because you just hear all this pop, 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 pop from all these relays making contacts. With a computerized thing, it just, you hit a note, it goes into the computer, and the computer sends it to the board, and then it goes right to the chest. So it essentially is, you know, what was a 1927 computer, if you will, is a lot smaller. It's sort of like if you look at the very first ever calculator, where it took up, you know, a whole assembly hall, and now my iPhone has more power than my computer had 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing what modern technology will do, but it really doesn't change the sound.
Okay.
Because a pipe is a pipe. It's going to let air blow through it to produce that tone.
But there has to be some part of you that's a purist.
Yes.
And says that it should remain with the leather straps. And
yeah, we could modernize both, all three organs, the Fox, the Redford, and the Sennett, but there's something about the originality of it. Some things don't need to be changed for the sake of being changed. It has worked for over 90 years. These mm-hmm. cedars are approaching 90 years old, and this stuff is still working.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
And with a computer, computers go out of, you know, they'll change technology, and the chip might not be available. Well, then you have to scrap the whole thing and modernize, and that can cost several thousands of dollars. Where with the relay, if the leather goes out, you just re-leather it. You know, there's always leather out there that you can redo the different parts with. So it, you know, you never have to worry about that technology running out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Any other theater music that you brought with us?
There is one that was played at a restaurant that has a rhythm unit on it. That because some of these theater organs were put in a restaurant. And there's a song called Rum and Coca-Cola by the Andrews Sisters that just fits the theater organ so well because with the rhythm unit controlling the real drums, you get to have a little fun with it. So here's a little bit of Rum and Coca-Cola.
Thank you.
I guess I'd sum that up by saying fun.
Yes. They're quite fascinating instruments, and there are still, I know of three restaurants left in the country that actually have these in it. So as you're sitting there eating and drinking, you get entertained on a big theater organ.
Okay.
So it's quite...
Any place around here?
Chicago is closest, and okay. Milwaukee, but the as I call it, the mothership is in Mesa, Arizona. They have a room that has an organ that... Well, they have the world's largest theater organ in the restaurant while you're eating, and they take requests and play all day long. It's just an amazing place.
Wow.
A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, tell us a little bit about, you touched on church organs, so let us know a little bit about church organs.
They come in all makes and sizes. There is no basis, and every one of them are different. When I sit down at a different console, it literally is learning that organ from scratch, because what you play on one organ will be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
In most classical organs are in churches, so they're meant to enable the worship service to proceed, to add to the worship. In symphonic halls, they're meant to, go along with the orchestra. And most of those are classical organs. There's some great music out there for it. You can have I know some churches that only have one manual or one keyboard organ that might only have two or three sets of pipes, but it suits that service well. And then I know some churches that have just these mammoth pipe organs because it fills the space and the people truly appreciate the music. Take, for instance, what was the Crystal Cathedral is spending over, $1.5 million to restore the big pipe organ that was out there.
Wow.
The Diocese of Orange County is completely redoing that organ so that they have it available for the church services. There's some mighty fine church organs in the Detroit area that are just incredible. I have a great respect for the guys and gals that play them because it really takes a more of a stringent control. You really have to, when you're playing Bach, you can't improvise. You sort of play what he's written because what he's written is wonderful. That's just not my style. I have a very hard time forcing myself to play what's on the written page. I would like to add my own flair. With a theater organ, there is no music written for it anymore. So we take arrangements of songs and make our own. If I hear a song and I like it, I'll just start to work my own arrangement of it. But with most church organs, you're not improvising on a hymn because then nobody's going to know when to sing.
That could be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a whole different... I don't want to say lifestyle, but it really is its own thing that I have a great respect for because I just can't do it.
You mentioned there are some church organs with just the single keyboard. Is a church organ normally two?
Two or more.
Oh, yeah, it could be more.
It could be more, yes.
Okay.
I know of one large classical organ that has seven keyboards.
Really?
Yes, it's out in Atlantic City at the big convention hall, and it's unwildly large because you just look at it and it looks like a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got seven keyboards in front of you, that the top one is almost straight up and down.
Okay.
But it's easy to reach so that as you're playing, you just move your arm up and you have the different keys,
right.
And then all the stop tabs surround you.
Right.
Most organs, I'd say, would have three or four keyboards.
Okay.
Plus the pedals, yes. The pedals you do play with your feet. You have 32 notes down there with your feet. Those are the bass notes down there with your feet. And then what I always say, what look like all those gas pedals down there, that's the volume. controlled, because all the pipes, both the theater organ and classical organ, all the pipes speak one volume, and that's very loud. So they're all put in these boxes or chambers, and they have what are called louvers. Think of it as Venetian blinds for sound. The more light, the more you have the Venetian blinds open, the more light comes in. Well, the more gas you give the pedal, the more those louvers open and close. And that's how the volume is controlled in an organ. So you'll see the organist moving those pedals, playing on the pedals and moving the different expression pedals around as well to control the volume. So it is definitely both hands, both feet, heavily involved with playing.
Wow. Actually, it just occurred to me that a performance, it takes a lot out of you regardless of what you're doing, whether it's sports or an organ or a trumpet or whatever it might be. But this is a physical.
Yes.
This is like an aerobic instrument.
It can be, yes. So, because you're always thinking about what you're about to do. You're working on what you're playing at the time, and then you're also thinking ahead of, okay, I need to change this sound, I need to do this, I need to get ready to do this. So it is, you sort of zone in on what you're doing because there's a lot to do. It's not just sitting down and playing chopsticks.
Exactly. Wow. Tell us about some of the other groups you're involved with, some of the other instruments you're involved with.
The first thing that I ever got involved with was mechanical instruments. These are instruments that play by themselves, by a roll or a cardboard book or some other means, like a music box has the little cylinders and it plucks the music box comb. Mm-hmm. I started those, as I said, when I was 3 years old with a player piano, and then moved up with my uncle with Nickelodeons, band organs. Band organs are what you get on merry-go-rounds, the organ that's inside there that plays by a roll. And then there's what are now called orchestrions, which are these large instruments that are larger than, you know, like, say, a full-size armoire, but inside will be a piano, pipes, drums. And then you have some of these European fairground organs, which are just band organs that are like three times larger than what you would think of in a merry-go-round. And I just was fascinated by how so much music could be created from a machine. Mm-hmm. They're called Nickelodeons because back then you would literally drop a nickel in and hear a song. So when everybody says they're going to see Nickelodeon, it's not the television station. I'm going to listen to some music from an old machine. Most of these machines were built, you know, before the 40s. These instruments were put into bars and ice cream parlors because the jukebox had not been invented yet. And so it was live music that a patron could drop a nickel in and listen to while they ate, while they drank, while they had ice cream, whatever. Different instruments have, different makers that had different instruments had different inside. Some of them only had a piano. Some of them had xylophone and piano or pipes or bells. There's a gentleman that I know down in Ohio that's actually still making new ones, and he has a banjo orchestra. And what we'll hear right now is a song from a banjo orchestra, and it is literally a machine that plays a piano, banjo, percussions, and it's just amazing knowing that this is all from a paper roll, from a machine. There's no human touching this other than to drop the nickel in the slot to hear.
What's the name?
I believe, Yes, Sir, That's My Baby.
Here we go.
Well, that too was fun.
Yeah, it's just amazing the fact that that was just created by paper going through with holes and being read and played by a machine.
That's crazy.
And that's why I'm so involved with the mechanical music in, world. There's an organization called the Musical Box Society International. Mm-hmm. I'm the chairman of the Midwest chapter. I'm actually hosting the convention in 2018 here in Detroit, where people from all over the world that are collectors or people that enjoy this instrument, these different instruments, will be coming in, because there's a couple private collections in this area that are large, but then you also have a museum that's open to the public that you could hear live some of these wonderful instruments. Mm-hmm. And it's just fun stuff.
Wow.
You just don't expect, when you drop a nickel into an old machine, to hear something like that happening. So.
Right. Now, do these vary in size, where you have very small tabletop versions, or
I have a small box that I grew up with that is about the size of a Kleenex box.
Okay.
That is has a music box movement in it, and I I grew up with that, playing that, and still have it to this day. Mm-hmm. And then you have some of these instruments that are over 30 feet wide, 16 feet tall, 8 feet deep, that are just packed with several different instruments. So you have a little bit of everything. It's quite amazing. One of the biggest makers in this area was Wurlitzer, the same folks that made the theater organs. You can go to Greenfield Village here in town and ride the carousel and be entertained by a Wurlitzer band organ. Wurlitzer was one of the large makers. That particular instrument that we just heard that song on was a Ramey Banjo Orchestra that you could still buy new today. There's all sorts of different sights and sounds that you can create from one of these. Be it a band organ, you have a calliope, like what you might associate a circus with. Those have quite a bit different sound, a louder sound, because those usually use brass whistles that are tuned. And so you have the sound of what is well known for circuses and parades with a calliope. And those can also be played either mechanically or by a keyboard. I have played numerous of those, and it's the only instrument that I play that I wear noise-canceling headphones, because they are so loud.
And you're right there.
You're right there. It's like these things can be heard over a mile away, and you're standing right next to it.
Wow.
But a lot of these large fairground organs were built to bring people to the fair. So you have these large organs that would be above the entry station, so that when you go to buy a ticket, the organ is actually way above that to draw in the crowd, to bring in the different people too. And that was one of the major things, especially over in Europe, for their fairs, to have these large fairground organs that are just incredible. And then you have the dance organs. You had, especially over in Belgium, you had all these dance halls. But again, you're not going to have a dance orchestra playing for 12 to 14 hours a day. And so what they invented were these dance organs of different sizes. And so it's taking pipes and then adding other instruments to it, changing the sound of some of the pipes to, sort of like how the theater organ changed the sound of pipes from a classical organ. And you would have a wonderful dance organ. And part of the show with these dance organs was not just the music, but also just looking at them, because some of them had beautiful facades that are carved and painted and gilded. And then some of them even did a light show. So as some of the sounds and some of the pipes changed, the lights would change on it as well. So you would have all this amazing stuff happening, in a dance hall.
Right.
Unfortunately, most of those got destroyed in the war effort. because a lot of them were over in Europe that got bombed. Several of them did make it over here to the country, and then several of them, you know, are still in existence back overseas. But unfortunately, we lost several hundred of them. But I believe we have a recording of a dance organ as well, so you could hear some of the great music that is on there. I think I have a Disney tune. A Spoonful of Sugar. A Spoonful of Sugar, played on a big dance organ.
Let's try that. Oops. That sounded like a whole band.
Yeah, it's and that instrument was made back in the 40s, and it's just a lot of fun. You could definitely see people dancing, mm-hmm. you know, to that in the different dance halls that are there, it's just fun music. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have a good time with it.
Definitely a feel good factor.
Yes, and then that I think that's why I enjoy the mechanical music field so much, because you have such a wide variety, from a little music box to a Nickelodeon to the dance organ. We'll hear a fairground organ here shortly. There's no two machines that are alike, practically. There's so many different makes and models out there. Part of the fun of being a member and chairman of the Music Box Society is we get to have meetings all over the country and see different people that have collections of these instruments that have been saved, have been restored. As I said, I'm hosting the convention here in 2018, mm-hmm. In August, so I'm looking very forward to that. And it brings people from all over the world, literally, to come. And for a week, we just get to have fun and listen to the different people's collections. Mm-hmm. We also have workshops on how to maintain, how to fix, how to do different things. I've learned how to gild, which is fascinating, taking a piece of plaster and putting gold leafing on, or whatever is needed to decor it. And I learned that from my friends in the field. So there's just so much going on, and there's so much of that can happen here in the Metro Detroit area, which is why it's exciting to be here with all this stuff, because especially with my passion of music, the Redford Theater, the Fox Theater, the Senate, the Music Box Society. Pretty much everything I do revolves around music of some sort. Mm-hmm. It's fun, especially bringing some of the kids of today into it. A lot of kids are surprised when I'm doing tours and I start to explain the organ. I jokingly say at first you could literally hear their eyes rolling in their head when I start talking about the organ, and then I'll play some Star Wars, and they just think I'm the coolest guy because I just played Star Wars on an old pipe organ.
Right.
And they're just not expecting that. some of the younger kids love when I play, you know, some songs from Frozen because they know that. It's just how adaptable these organs are. And then I'll take them through a museum where there's mechanical instruments, and they're just, you know, they can't believe that there's nobody playing these instruments. They're playing on their own. And then they get into the mechanics of watching everything work, the pumps that are creating the air to play the pipes, the vacuum that is used to read the roll and play the piano. It's all mechanical. The only thing electrical in it is the pump that's running, the motor that's running the pumps and driving the gears to run everything else. And to know that, you know, these instruments were all made in the 20s, mm-hmm. made in the 30s. They're still repairable today because you can go, you know, you can re-leather something, you can build a new gear. If a piece of wood needs redone, you can go to the shop and make one or find someone that knows how to make one. And so they stand the test of time, mm-hmm. you know, because they just, you know, it's irreplaceable. You can just keep working on it.
Right. I was wondering, as you were talking about the different repairs and whatever that people are capable of, are there groups around that actually make these types of instruments?
If you pay for it, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
a lot of them are more along the lines of restoring them.
Okay.
And so we have a couple companies here in the state of Michigan that that's what they do. They go through and they restore instruments. They will build a new one, but for the most part, they're going through and keeping these wonderful instruments that are out there and keeping them going.
Okay.
That's what's going to be happening, you know, eventually at the Fox Cedars. We're going to be taking apart that whole organ, and every little part of it is going to be redone using the same materials that they used it originally. But, you know, as I said, it's 90 years old. They're starting to show their age. Mm-hmm. Some of them are not working. So we're going to replace it, and then it's going to be good for another 90 or more years.
Right.
And
all
then,
right.
you know, generations to come will have this magnificent instrument, you know, to be able to play and enjoy. Same with the mechanical world. You know, there's collectors out there that also work on them, keep them going. One of the largest collections in the world is in Chicago. And if it wasn't for him restoring some of these machines, he has some of the only ones that are left of these machines. And they would be gone forever if his passion wasn't there to get these machines and restore them. I know of one instrument that we're going to hear shortly that arrived. It's a big Gavioli organ. Gavioli was made overseas, and this is one of the largest ones they ever made. And when he got it, it essentially was just a wreck in a box. The whole thing needed restored. The whole front facade of it was gone. He had the whole front facade brought back in by pictures. And he had somebody rebuild the whole organ from pictures. And now you have this magnificent organ that has is what is known as 110 key, where there's 110 different inputs that the book music has. So be it a note, turning on or off a rank of pipes, or hitting a percussion, you just have this magnificent instrument. And here is a wonderful example of a Gavioli 110 key European fairground organ.
And what's the name?
I forget the name of the particular track. I want to say
The White Blackbird.
Okay, yes.
All right, here we go. Well, that was also a lot of energy.
Yes, that was what
serious.
Would yeah that would bring in people to a fairground, to a small fair or whatever. That was the music to draw people closer in, and you know that organ is just incredibly large and beautiful, and again, just fun music. So it's just part of, you know, the okay. mechanical music world is just fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. I learned so much today, too, about that I never knew. So thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let's get the last track started. And then I think I saw Daddy G scooping some ice cream or something across the room. So let's see what that's all about. And we'll get started with the song, and then we can talk over it a little
Sounds
bit as
good.
We end. Okay. Okay, Dave, tell us a little bit about what we are hearing. We have like a minute.
Yeah, this is a song called South American Way. This is me on that same Barton Theater organist from Chicago. Very similar to the organ at the Redford Theater. You have, this is a nice little Latin flair to it. Mm-hmm. So you have the tambourine and the different other instruments all there. And again, this is just one person at one organ console. Just having a lot of fun making some good music.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thanks you so much for being here today with Impact, and thank you all for listening. And remember, Impact is a show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community, and this was a very positive experience. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Yo, guys and dolls. You are at the malt shop with Daddy G here on WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeezer, and head on down to the malt shop. Where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing. And here we